The long and winding road leads us here to the doorstep of the postseason. One win, a little bit of help away from ending 17 seasons of misery.
Allen steps up. Jumps over the defenders to pick up the first. Now, how many quarterbacks have you ever seen hurdle anyone?
Oops, he throws. Touchdown! Andre Reed for the touchdown! The Bills have scored!
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. You're listening to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast. Thank you very much again for listening. I am Matt, and Alex, as always, joins me.
Hey, Matt, how are you doing?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Good, thanks.
Yeah. We're going to start off just talking a little bit about the episode quickly and what's coming up. Obviously, we're going to start off with the news section. We're going to talk about the 53-man roster prediction for the defensive line. We're going to combine both the defensive end and defensive tackle into this episode and also go on to the all-time 53-man roster and give you the update on who won the O-line battle. And also, we were joined on the podcast by Matt Perino, the Bills beat reporter, whose articles you can see on the NewYorkUpstate.com. So we'll get to that interview as well on this podcast. But first and foremost, we will start off with the latest news. And there was a few roster moves done in this last week. We recently signed, as people knew, Isaac Asiata. That only lasted a couple of days, and he decided to retire, I think, even before even attending training camp. In this place, a couple of days later, we signed Nico Siragusa, who was drafted in round 4 in the 2017 draft by the Baltimore Ravens. He spent his rookie season on IR with a knee injury, and 2018 spent time on the Ravens practice squad, and in December was picked up by the Green Bay Packers, but never saw the field. And another roster move was the fact that the Bills actually agreed a settlement release with Jeremiah Searles, so he's now left training camp and is no longer on the roster. Next, we'll just talk about Ed Oliver and how he's actually been in practice and in training camp. Since the pads have come on, we've been hearing a load of rave reviews about how well he's now performed and how well he's getting to grips with it and taking his chances when he's been given the first team reps. When the pads come on, he's just exploding his plays. Not winning too many of his one-to-ones because he was up against Quinton Spain, who we believe probably has got a lockdown for that left guard and obviously is a wily veteran. But he has been that explosive and been working on a mean ball rush. And twice in the last week, he was actually he ended up pushing his opponent directly into the quarterbacks, Barkley and Allen. He would knock Josh Allen to the floor, nearly trapped his leg, in which got a very strong ticking off from Sean McDermott for that one. But
that doesn't bother me. It really. Hey, offensive line, be better.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I have to say. I mean, obviously, without Mitch Morse in, that kind of really hurts us offensively on the offensive line. But if the kid's gonna do that in practice, then that means that his motor is at 110%. And I hate that expression, but everything I've heard and seen from Ed Oliver is he's going to be disruptive every down, every play, every game. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, they've been doing situational drills recently. I think they did some red zone work. And what I've been reading, you've been getting the sense, and they've been putting in how he's been constantly getting pressure into the backfield and penetrating that offensive line. So that's with pads on. He was a bit slow and obviously running with the second teams to start with in the mini camps. But since the pads have come on, it seems like we've actually started to see the true Ed Oliver, and you've got to believe that he would be in shout to actually get the starting role against the Jets and potentially look to be defensive rookie of the year. I know he was about second or third favorite behind, was it Devin Bush or Devin White? I'm not sure, but it's exciting to see him with the pads on. And if he can take that momentum to the season, I think we've got a hell of a steal in that first round.
Yeah, 100%.
So, as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, we had Matt Perino, the Buffalo Bills reporter for Syracuse Post Standard, and his articles can be found at newyorkupstate.com. He joined us and we obviously fired a few questions off, and he's given us a real good insight and given us nuggets that we may not usually as UK fans be able to get, obviously being over here and not a training camp. So please enjoy the interview we've had with Matt Perino. And we are joined by Matt Perino, who is a Bills beat reporter for the Syracuse Post-Standard, and you can catch his articles on the NewYorkUpstate.com website. Matt, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. I'm excited to talk with a couple of Bills fans from the UK. Like I told you beforehand, I've been to London once in my life, and it was an amazing experience. And if the Bills get a game there again, I'd love to come back.
We'd love that as well, and if they do, we get you back on, and might even get you to a couple of events we get on.
Definitely.
I want to start off by saying internally, what are the expectations for the season for the Bills, and can we see an upward trajectory on Josh Allen in his second season?
I think that, you know, off the jump, the expectations should be significantly higher from a year ago, just because this is the third year of the Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott regime, the era in Buffalo. And usually in that third year is when the expectations really start to ramp up, mainly because they've had 2 years and two drafts to put their players in place. We saw last year that, you know, with all the dead cap money and, you know, basically a teardown of the entire roster, they were still able to get 6 wins out of a group that was, you know, challenged from a talent perspective. So I think that going into the season with a schedule that's not very difficult, I mean, there's some hard games, especially late in the year, but I think that if they can get off to a really strong start, I think around 9-10 wins should be your expectation.
Yeah, I think we did one of our first few episodes when me and Alex did, we did a little season by season. Okay, probably a bit too early, but I think I had us down at about 10, 11 wins. I think, Alex, I think you had him at 9 and 10 wins.
If I said 10, that sounds very, doesn't sound like me. I say 8 and 8 until they prove me wrong, essentially.
Oh, yeah. You're the realist. I'm the optimist.
Thank you for not calling me a pessimist. So, Matt, I mean, speaking specifically about Josh Allen, what has he shown on at training camp that he's improved so far?
You know, it's really hard to talk about, you know, improvements from a season perspective when you're talking about practice. But what I've really, you know, noticed with Josh Allen is just how much more comfortable he is than, you know, definitely at this time of year last year. But, you know, just from an entire situation and environment standpoint, you look at his comfortable the comfort level in Brian Daboll's offense. You've seen him get to a point now entering year two where he's not only thinking about what he has to do to execute, but thinking about things more in terms of the offense and the players around him and how he can put his playmakers in positions to make plays. So, you know, just from an intellectual standpoint, he is so much further than he was a year ago. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and the host had interviewed Sam Darnold, with the Jets, and he asked them, you know, about, you know, having an offensive coach in place now with Adam Gase and how much that's going to help him. And he's like, let me stop you right there. It's not even about defensive or offensive coach. I just kind of get what I'm supposed to do at this point. When you come in as a rookie in the NFL, there are so many pressures and so many things that you're dealing with. You're trying to, especially a quarterback, you're trying to learn for yourself. You're trying to learn for those around you. You're trying to be a leader. You're trying to be a good teammate. There's so many things pulling at you that I think that now we get a chance to see, with things slowed down a little bit for Allen, with all of these new weapons and a rebuilt offensive line, what he's able to do. Obviously, you know, a little bit of concern with Mitch Morse's already entering the concussion protocol, and he's a big piece of that reimagined offense. So I think that you go into the season with some concerns up the middle of your offensive line. I wrote about it on Friday night, the night practice back in Buffalo. That offensive line really broke down in front of him against the first team defense, and that was with Russell Bodine leading the way. So, you know, there's so many elements. I mean, we could sit here and talk for 2 hours about Josh Allen and everything that's gone on with him and where expectations go, but I think he's in a much better place. Now it's just about finding some consistency, and we'll find that out, you know, pretty early on in this schedule.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I just want to quickly mention how obviously Ken Dorsey is helping Josh Allen, obviously coming in with obviously Cam Newton, his previous quarterback, and also on that Mitch Morse concussion you mentioned, how concerned should we be, and who have they earmarked as like the backup? Because we've seen Feliciano, Bodine, and I believe Long actually taking center snaps.
Yeah, it's quite a mess at the moment. Russell Bodine, I don't see a scenario where he makes this roster. Obviously, he wasn't good a year ago. So far in camp, he's been equally poor. So you look at a guy like John Feliciano, and he has some position flex, and that's why they brought him in here. But he's fighting for the starting right guard job, you know, alongside, you know, Spencer Long and Wyatt Teller. It seems like Quentin Spain is kind of put his hands on that left guard spot, and he looks to be the guy there. But there's still a lot of moving parts here. And with Mitch Morse's fourth concussion now, documented concussion in his now entering his fifth season, that's a serious concern. I mean, you start to pile these concussions one on top of another, and then you start to discuss, you know, could retirement possibly creep into the situation here? And they just made him the highest paid center in the NFL. They obviously believe in his abilities and what he'd be able to bring to this offense and to this offensive line. So, you know, he's fighting his way to get back. I don't want to jump the gun there yet, but I think that it should be concerning. And I think the depth behind him, while more pieces, I'm not necessarily sure that there's an answer behind Mitch Morse, because none of those guys have proven to be able to play at a high level at that center spot in their careers.
Well, they must have known about his injury history in the past. To not line up a solid backup for him kind of sounds irresponsible. I've heard so much about movement on the offensive line with maybe Ford coming in and Nisecki getting to start. If you're saying Bodine might get cut, then, I mean, who's our starter if Morse can't suit up in week one?
You know, going into this spring period, they had five guys, really, that could play center. Mitch Morse, Feliciano, Spencer Long, Russell Bodine, Ike Bucker, and actually six now that I think about it, and Jeremiah Searles, who just got injured for the season, and the team gave him an injury release settlement. So they had plenty of bodies that they were planning to throw around. I think Ike Bucker is a guy that people have liked at various stages, but he struggled at that center spot with the third team so far in camp. And I think that John Feliciano and Spencer Long, you know, they do factor into this. But I think because you're still trying to figure things out at that right guard position, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Because if Mitch Morse comes back in the next week or two and is able to get back in there, and then you have Spencer Long and John Feliciano kind of working back at guard, they're not getting those reps at center. So if you lose Mitch Morse during the season to another concussion or some type of injury, then you're talking about having to rework things once again. And there's such a huge drop off from Mitch Morse to whoever they put in at that second spot. We saw how much of an issue that was last year. And so they did what they did. They brought in a lot of depth on this offensive line. They went out and they spent a second round draft pick to bring in a potential Pro Bowl caliber tackle or guard in Cody Ford. So they've addressed things. Getting Ty Nsekhe and the deal that they got him for, I mean, you have to give Brandon Bean credit for what he tried to do and what he was able to do. But that center spot is so important, and I think it's more of a discussion on Mitch Morse and, you know, the sustainability of his career at this point with some of these concussion issues. That's more of the point. I don't think you can really call it irresponsible for not putting in a backup spot, because I think that they did go out and they did bring in tons of bodies to rework this offensive line. Just right now, figuring out what's going to be the backup plan to Morse is paramount.
Yeah.
So with that idea, with the offensive line being so important to maybe the philosophy of this offense, are the Bills going to stay a run-first team, or do the wide receiver additions indicate a possible philosophy change where they maybe go like 60-40 pass run instead of like 50-50? Is there any indication from training camp that this we might start throwing the ball more?
It's really a great question, and I think – you got to go back to the philosophy of the head coach, and he believes that you win games based on what you're able to do at the line of scrimmage. And I think that he thinks that this team should have a good running game. And they brought in other pieces in that running backs room to try to develop that running game a little bit even further. And I think that you look at the passing game as well, and you go back to the offensive line woes of last season and potential woes if Mitch Morse isn't able to go. What can cure bad offensive line play from a passing perspective? Quick passes. You look at Tom Brady over the last 10 years, I mean 20 years really, but the success that he had, a lot of it is in his ability to get rid of the ball, go through his reads quickly, figure out a way to get the ball. I mean, look at Julian Edelman's success out of the slot in New England. They brought in Cole Beasley to be their version of Julian Edelman. And so far in training camp, yes, I've gotten one of my big takeaways is how much they're already implementing Cole Beasley in this offense. And I think that opens up some of the downfield stuff they're going to want to do with Robert Foster and John Brown. And I think you're going to see a lot quicker, more succinct passing game. Now, do I think that that means that they're going to be a pass first team? That remains to be seen. I still think that the philosophy of Sean McDermott is to run the ball. So yeah, we'll see. But you brought in Brian Daboll because of his creativity in the passing game, and you know you'd really like to see that unleashed a bit in 2019.
Yeah, I mean we're looking forward to it. I mean, obviously we do love the run game. Obviously, hopefully Shady has the bounce back here, and obviously with Singletary and what I've heard, obviously by just listening to you guys and all the other beat reporters, actually saying how much Singletary looks to be the real deal, that obviously I'd like to see us go to more passing, but obviously I don't like him to obviously abandon the run, so to speak. So it's going to be an interesting season going forward.
Yeah, I'll be taking Singletary in the last round of my draft for a keeper for next year in fantasy football. I'm going to try and stash him. I believe in Singletary for next year.
Yeah. I mean, is there anyone on the roster at the moment who this is a bit of a two-parter? Anyone on the 53-man roster or the roster itself who could be a surprise cut? And is there anyone that the fans, our listeners, may not know or might not have heard of in the reports that could earn a roster spot?
That's a good question. I mean, I think for the most part, one of the areas that's going to be a little bit more hotly contested is that defensive backfield, and particularly the safety position. Kurt Coleman's come in here in just about 2 weeks and really solidified himself as the top backup at that safety spot, which brings up a couple interesting things. What does the future hold for Saran Neal, who's kind of been converted to a big nickel cornerback? He's been playing backup to Taron Johnson for most of camp, but he's also sprinkled in on the third team as well. So you wonder with the ability of certain guys like EJ Gaines and Kevin Johnson that they brought in free agency. Those guys are going to make this team. They're veterans. They have experience. They have playmaking abilities, and they have position flex. They can both play that nickel corner spot. So this, I think things for Saran Neal are up in the air at the moment. And also Jaquan Johnson, the sixth round draft pick out of Miami, he's somebody that they really like, and he's probably going to be kept on this roster, which really makes you try to figure out, as they're trying to keep playmakers, as they're trying to keep offensive linemen, and with all the injuries, what does that mean for a guy like Saran Neal that was drafted last year? And also the linebacker position is very interesting because you have your three starters in Tremaine Edmonds, Lorenzo Alexander, and Matt Milano. And then after that, it seems like Corey Thompson and Julian Stanford have pretty much locked those primary backup spots. They both play special teams. And then after that, it's kind of a race between Tyrell Dotson, Voshon Joseph, and Deion Lacy and Maurice Alexander for probably one or two spots. And I think that's tough because Maurice Alexander has been playing almost every role you can think of, from special teams, slot corner. He's a former safety, lining it up at the Mike linebacker spot and on the outside. So they've really liked Tyrell Dotson, the undrafted free agent. I haven't heard a ton about Voshon Joseph, although you can see his athleticism and speed on display in one-on-one drills. It's going to be interesting to see what they're able to do there, because I don't think, because of the way this roster is constructed, they can keep seven linebackers and keep all the pieces that they want to keep. It's going to be tough when they get down to these cutdowns, because there's a lot more talent than there was a year ago.
Yeah.
Man, you just threw a huge wrench into my 53-man roster with what you just talked about.
It's tough, man. I'm looking through things right now, and you know, I could see a situation where you'd want to keep seven wide receivers, and I just don't see how that's possible with the kind of depth they're going to want to probably keep on the offensive line, what they're going to do at running back. I could see a scenario where they keep five, maybe six running backs, including Patrick DeMarco, because of the versatility of all four of those running backs, including TJ Yeldon, Singletary, McCoy, and Gore, and Sonoris Perry's special teams prowess. And they love Patrick DeMarco. I asked Heath Farwell, the special teams coordinator, last week, who stood out to you besides Lorenzo Alexander, because you were familiar with him before you came here during his time in Seattle. He actually played against Lorenzo Alexander. And he said Patrick DeMarco. He's played thousands of special teams reps in his career. He's consistent. He's a leader. I think Patrick DeMarco is going to be on this team, and that takes another roster spot away from somebody. So it's tough. And what do they do at quarterback? Do they want to keep three quarterbacks on this roster? Do they want to protect Tyree Jackson in the case that they were to release him and another team pick him up? You know, that's probably the least of their concerns at this point, but it's something to consider.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very few tough decisions when it comes to the cuts. One last question. I know our listeners are probably going to be intrigued to hear this. How's Christian Wade getting on? I know obviously he's probably going to get hopefully the practice squad position, being the international player, but how's he been looking in training camp?
Yeah, I think that he'll definitely be on the practice squad. One of the cool things about that pathway program is it just gives these players an opportunity to kind of go through a full NFL season from a learning perspective. So I think he'll definitely, I don't see any scenario of him making the roster, but he'll definitely be on the practice squad. You know, he's got a great attitude. He's got a great mindset. It's a crazy thing to go playing at such a high level in one professional sport and completely change gears and try to do it in a sport you've never played before and at the highest level. And I think he's handled himself well. I think Sean McDermott's been really thrilled with just, you know, what he brings from a attitude perspective. You want guys with good attitudes, and he's able to learn from a lot of experienced backs in Frank Gore and LeSean McCoy. And he's made a couple plays here and there. I haven't noticed him a ton, but you know, it's going to be interesting to track his progress. Cause when you see him out there on the field, the athleticism and the skill set is undeniable. I mean, the guy is a premium professional athlete just from a physical perspective. So, but it seems like he's enjoying himself. He's always got a smile on his face, and you know, it's going to be a fun story to, you know, track to once we get into the season and he really sees things up close and personal to get his feedback and his experience in the whole thing.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, we're all rooting for him. We're trying to actually try and get him on the podcast. We're having a few good discussions. We just haven't managed to nail him down yet. But it's always nice to hear how he's actually obviously getting on, because obviously the main focus will be the first and second teams. May not hear about those lower end teams, or at least from our point of view, just obviously listen to the reports and obviously not being there. But he's someone we are actually rooting for to possibly next season or the season after, making that roster position official.
Yeah, he's a fun one, man. I definitely think there's a lot of Bills fans already rooting for him as well, because he's got such a, you know, an infectious personality. I mean, he's out here signing autographs with all the guys, and yeah, it'll be fun to track him.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, that's pretty much all the questions we actually we have, which is good, because I know you told me that you've got an interview lined up quite shortly for when we actually recorded this. But if for the followers, for the listeners, where can they actually follow you on social media and read your articles?
Yeah, so the best place to start is at Matt Parrino, P-A-R-R-I-N-O, on Twitter. That's kind of where I funnel all my content out from there. We're doing a lot of, if you're on Instagram, we're doing a lot more stuff with our IG page. It's at Buffalo Bills NY Up. And that's, you know, just, you know, interviews, analysis, you know, just fun stuff from training camp. We have a lot of stuff on there. And nyup.com, syracuse.com. You can follow our life. This is my second year on the beat, actually. I spent 5 years in Las Vegas, worked for UFC.com. And so it's been a big transition. But I feel like I'm definitely at the stage of this gig where I'm much more comfortable and dialed in on this roster. And I'm excited to get things going here with this first preseason game on Thursday night.
That's awesome. We're looking forward to it. Forward to it as well. Matt, thank you very, very much for coming on and chatting to us. We very much appreciate it.
It was a great time, Alex, Matt. Thank you so much for having me on, and love the UK Bills contingent. It's crazy to see. I get messages all the time from Bills fans all over the globe, and it's such a cool time to be in digital media and in professional sports, talk to you guys from all areas, all corners of the globe. So thank you for having me on.
Thank you very much. And enjoy your interview.
Take care, guys.
All right, go Bills. Thank you, Matt, for that interview. Really good insight into what's been going on at practice so far. And now we'll lead right into our regularly scheduled program, where we dissect the roster and choose players for the 53-man roster.
That's cool.
Just a note, previously, when we were talking about running backs, in hindsight, I made the horrible idea that we were going to keep TJ Yeldon. I think that's not going to happen anymore. And after finishing my 53-man roster, I did not leave enough spots on defense. So I am retroactively cutting TJ Yeldon. I think it just makes complete sense. I mean, I talked about why he would sign here if he didn't think he would get playing time.
Yeah.
I think he signed here because no one else was willing to offer him a contract. So I bet you we'll see him get cut quite soon.
Yeah. I mean, going on, it's possible. It's possible. And obviously, what you probably heard on the interview of Matt Parrino, he thinks that they could keep six, which could be interesting. But
yeah, I mean, in looking at the roster as a whole, I see that there needs to be more space for defensive players. I mean, yeah. Matt also mentioned talking about keeping like six wide receivers, and I just think that, I mean, I had six. But I mean, did he say seven? He said six, right?
For he was saying six or seven.
Yeah, seven wide receivers would be crazy. I mean, David Sills is kind of falling off lately. Duke Williams, I think, who we picked, is, I wouldn't say locked in, because it's between Duke Williams and Ray-Ray McCloud now, right?
Yeah, McLeod's been running with the first. He's actually been proving quite a lot and received a lot of praise. So,
yeah,
that one could be under that place. Obviously, we've set in stone on our what we think the Bills would have done, obviously, prior to the training camp. So, we're going to have to stick to our guns on there. But obviously, we're both going to be giving our ones towards the end of the training camp. So hopefully we may put them in there. We may not. I'm not even going to reveal who I've got in mind. So we'll wait and see on that one.
but for the current 53 man roster on the D line, it's pretty obvious, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'll rattle through the names. I mean, you've got on defensive tackle side, you've got Jordan Phillips, Harrison Phillips, Ed Oliver, Carl Pecco, Robert Thomas, LT Walton, and the guy I always have a hard time pronouncing. I'm going to give it a good go this time. Star Lotulele. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Lotulele.
Okay, you've got a better pronunciation than me. So,
yeah.
Say that five times when you're drunk.
Kind of like a vibe, man. Like Star Lotulele.
Try saying that five times when you're drunk very fast.
It just rolls off the tongue, man. Star Lotulele.
And for the defensive ends, we've got Jerry Hughes, Trent Murphy, Shaq Lawson, Mike Love, Eddie Yarbrough, and Daryl Johnson Jr. Now, I don't know about you, Alex, but I have a feeling that Bills will have at least seven of those locked, and we could probably say that they're Jordan Phillips, Harrison Phillips, Ed Oliver, Star Lotulele, Jerry Hughes,
but good enough.
Jerry Hughes, Trent Murphy, and Shaq Lawson.
Yeah,
leaving probably a battle in camp between Mike Love, Eddie Yarbrough, and Daryl Johnson Jr.
Yes.
Now, me, I think you may have the same inkling in what we've actually seen so far in training camp, that the vibe is that it's Mike Love's position to lose in there.
Yeah, I mean, going in, you would think it would be Eddie Yarbrough just because he spent time with the team last year, but that doesn't really mean anything. This is a what-can-you-do-for-me-now league. I kind of wish we had asked Matt about the defensive line, because then I would have been able to pick this last spot, because right now, I'm a mixture of I don't know and I don't care, kind of.
Yeah.
Because I think Shaq Lawson will be rotating for Murphy and Hughes. So I think you're mostly going to see those three guys on the field unless there's an injury. I mean, it's definitely the defensive end spot. We're not going to carry five defensive tackles.
No.
So it really comes down to, like you said, Love, Yarbrough, Johnson.
Saying that, I remember reading an article. It might be one of those camp reviews where there was one play that Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott cooked up for the defense, where they had, I think, only Ed Oliver as the only tackle, and he had Hughes, Murphy, I think Lawson, Alexander, Edmonds, Milano, as a formation in the team. So possible that they may have five, but yeah, I agree. It's most likely going to be four defensive tackles, four defensive ends. I mean, I've heard reviews in the last few days of Daryl Johnson, how he's trying to work himself into contention. I think Eddie Yarbrough, I think he's just fallen off the radar. I've not heard much from him, but it's Mike Love's to lose. I mean, he's constantly improved over time. He's learned a lot from Lorenzo Alexander, and actually started to beef up his pass rush. So I think this one would be nice and sweet, to be honest, in who we're going to choose. So unless you have any different, I can see it sitting on the 53 man roster: Hughes, Love, Murphy, Lawson, Star. I'm not going to say a surname. I've said it twice already, probably very badly. Harrison and Jordan Phillips and Ed Oliver. As I said in the news, he's been really improving and actually really dominating. Okay, yeah. without the strongest offensive line out there, but yeah. It's what you put out in there, and against some of the teams where we were expected to win, you may have that line, that O-line, that may not be their strongest. So seeing him dominate there obviously gives you great hope.
Yeah, it's going to come down to the preseason games. I don't think these aren't positions where there's enough depth to cut a guy. I mean, we've seen guys get cut for injuries and stuff like that. I mean, letting Juwan Foggy go so we can sign another tight end, that kind of stuff needs to happen because we have so many linebackers. I think that there will be a battle all preseason for this fourth defensive end spot. So I don't think we're going to let anybody go early. It's not going to be before the third preseason game, I don't think.
Yeah, I think they're
shot.
Yeah, there is a lot of positioning and battles still out there. I agree. I think if you can see the cuts come in, it's either going to be an injury settlement release or another team's released someone that McDermott may be high on, and they're going to cut someone to get him on board. But yeah, I think between the fourth preseason game, around that time, you will start seeing cuts. But then again, the fourth preseason usually is your bubble guys. Guys may not make the roster. Can they splash some sort of inspiration to get themselves on? Which sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, you know, normally I don't pay much attention to the backups. I just only focus on the starters and, you know, who's getting good, who's falling off. But because of this podcast now, I spent a lot of time meddling with the backups and who's going to make a spot and everything. So I think for the first time in a long time, I'm going to actually pay attention to the fourth preseason game, which sounds crazy because nobody does that. And we're not getting paid for this. So yeah. I don't know why I would bother, but I'm going to actually care about it this time around.
Yay! But no, so I mean, then that means so far that we've got so we taking out from the, if I come back over the what the Bills are going to do on the 53, are we taking out Yeldon from that to free up the extra spot?
Yes, and for me, I mean, for my overall roster, I'm taking out Yeldon so I can add someone in the defensive secondary, so it's not going to affect the show. But yeah, we'll talk about that when we get there. Okay.
So then, with the D line pretty much all sewn up, the 53 man roster we believe the Bills will go into the season with is Josh Allen, Matt Barkley, a quarterback, LeSean McCoy, Frank Gore, Devin Singletary, Sonaris Perry, and Patrick DeMarco as the running back core, a running up wide receiver, Brown, Foster, Beasley, Jones. We put down Duke Williams and Andre Roberts. Tight ends, obviously dependent on Croft. We've gone with him, Croft, Kroom, Smith, and Knox. If Croft doesn't make it to start with, we go with Kroom, Knox, Smith, and Sweeney. O-line, we've gone with Dawkins, Ford, Morse, Spain, Feliciano, Long, Inseki, Teller, and Waddle. And D-line, Hughes, Love, Murphy, Lawson, Starr, Phillips, Jordan, and Harrison, and Ed Oliver. So that's who we believe the Bills will have in their on their 53-man roster come August the 31st, September the 1st, when we find out when the cuts are.
Mm-hmm.
So after this short
Do you regret any of your picks so far?
What, on my personal 53?
No, just, I mean, from our decisions, I mean, and with training camp kind of, really in the middle of it, did we make a mistake anywhere? Aside from Yeldon, obviously, which I will take 100% responsibility for.
I possibly think so, yeah. I mean, when we did the wide receiver tight end, I think that was just like a week or a week before training camp, I think. I can't, we have to go back and double check that. But we obviously had Williams, and if we include Tyler Croft, and he's fit. The good news is he's out of a walking boot and actually walking normally and doing warm up drills. With Croft, we would have Kroom and no Sweeney. I think now we've had a week or two of training camp, I potentially see that our potential picks of Williams and Kroom may actually may be incorrect, and it may actually be potentially Ray McLeod and Tommy Sweeney. So part of me has a bit of regret, but a part of me's not. A part of me still believes that Duke Williams will be the Bills, will be McDermott's pick for that number six wide receiver. And
yeah, we did that show. That was right when Embedded came out, and we were like, oh my God, is David Sills awesome? After a few practices, no, he's not. He's not big enough, he's not fast enough, and he's not running clean routes. It's 50-50 Duke Williams and Ray McLeod now, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's been talk about Nick Easley, but he's had one day where he's actually where he's excelled. So I would probably say it is between those. But as far as what we think the Bills have done, we've already locked that in. So I think we've made a bit of a mistake. But hey ho,
it happens. That's, right?
That's why we shouldn't do it before training camp, or at least do it right during training camp. Yeah.
So back to the D line. How are you going to order the defensive tackles? I mean, obviously Oliver and Lotulelei start, right?
Yep.
Who's your first in?
For defensive tackle?
Yeah.
I'd love to say Harrison Phillips, but I think because he's had more runs with the first at the moment, and I've seen he's done a few good plays at the line of scrimmage, I would say Jordan Phillips would be the first rotated in.
I mean, do we only like Harrison Phillips so much because he's basically mini Kyle Williams? Like, personality-wise? I mean, but we drafted him in the same mold as him. I mean, there was that connection that they had last year. Everyone was joking about how he's a baby Kyle Williams and stuff. I think the media created more of Harrison Phillips than his play on the field did. Because he's the number four now, right?
At this moment in time, yes. I mean, it's one of those that maybe it takes this season and maybe the bit of next preseason for him to try and break that baby Kyle persona and tag that the media are giving him. Yeah. So I think at the moment he is number four. I do think, judging by who else we've got on the roster, all that, I can't see him being in danger of losing his place. I think the staff do like him. It's just he got back, as you say, he got branded as a baby Carl, or like a Carl Williams clone. Maybe that's getting to him a bit, that he just needs to step back, observe a little bit more. Yes, rely on Carl for guidance and advice. If he offers you that advice, you take it regardless. Yeah. But I think this season, playing the more, obviously with Oliver now in and Jordan Phillips having a good training camp so far,
there'll be less pressure on him.
Yeah, so he'll have more time to, he'll get the odd rotation in, and it'll give him a bit more chance to actually verse himself well in the game and actually have his own identity going forward. I still think he's going to be a player that's going to be with us for a good 5 years or so.
Because I mean, Lotulelei doesn't have that much time left, I don't think.
No,
he wasn't outstanding last year. So, but I mean, going back and reading Harrison Phillips' like draft summary and stuff like that, and his scouting reports and stuff. I mean, there's so many good things to say about him. I mean, quick to react, learns offenses quickly, picks up the plays, great with his hands, powerful. But just, I mean, we just haven't really seen that yet. So hopefully he figures that out, because, I mean, he's a likable guy. But, I mean, being fourth means that you're close to falling off, and I hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to make interesting, as I say. We hope that he can try and form his own identity, and we as fans, the media, can actually try and get him, move him out and say he's not, or move him off the baby Carl comparison. Because you say, I think it's the pressure on that and how he's got to, let's say, he brought in an heir apparent for him. He's going to feel that pressure. But hopefully, with less pressure and a couple of other guys that have actually had a stellar camp, he can just chill, learn the game a bit more, take it a bit more slowly in his development, and see if we can see if he can make that impact next year. Say, as you say, Star's getting a bit older. I think we only signed Phillips to another year deal, so this could be a potential make or break. But hopefully, what the coaches have seen in him, they will actually they'll keep him on. And if they didn't like him, they would have probably cut him straight away. Probably.
Yeah. Right.
So that brings us on to our next subject after the after a quick little interval, where we go over the 53-man All-Star, or the All-Star roster for the defensive line position. So we're going to do, we're each going to have two defensive ends and two defensive linemen to discuss on this one, and we'll also go over the results of the previous poll, where we asked you to choose your O-line all time. So keep listening, and we'll be back shortly.
Kyle Williams, touchdown! Amazing!
And for the next segment on the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues, and once again, thank you for staying in charge and listening to us. We go over the All-Star team. Now, in the last podcast, we went over the all-time O-line, and we had a poll up, which a fair few of you voted in, which we always love and like to hear your opinions. Now, let's just remind you of the who each has had. I had Jason Peters, Eric Wood, Kent Hull, Joe D and Cordy Glenn as my selection. And Alex, you had Billy Shaw, Joe D, Kent Hull, Joe Devlin, and John Finer as your five selections.
Yes.
And I can actually reveal that it was you, Alex, that got the votes from the listeners.
You can't see it, but my hands are up in the air in celebratory pose right now. I think sometimes if you just mention older players, you'll get the win on that. But
yeah.
I think this time my knowledge of kind of the older players really buried you, because I mean, Cordy Glenn.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think people are mad about that for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, I think as I said in the last podcast, being a bit more of a newer fan, obviously from since 99 compared to you, which obviously Buffalo's been in your family for years. I think for that one, I would have always I probably would have said, yeah, it's Alex's to lose. So
I mean, honestly, what year were you born?
I was born in 86.
Yeah, all right. So me too. So I just think I used to work at a bank back home, and hopefully no one's listening. I used to spend a lot of time on the computer, just like on Wikipedia and historical sites, just reading about old players and the team history and stuff like that. So, yeah. I mean, I just kind of soak it all in. It's not like I was watching games in the 80s, you know, or anything like that. But, yeah, it's just I just like to learn as much as I can about stuff that I'm interested in. Not to say that you don't, but, I mean, it would be super easy to just be a fan from 1999 and then just kind of go from there. But yeah. I think for me, because I was a fan for just a little bit longer, those mid-2000 seasons hurt so bad I spent a lot of time looking at the past and trying to kind of replace how bad we were with how good we used to be. And learning about all these good players that we once had.
I would say 99 was when I first started. I mean, obviously, I've looked back in the 90s and obviously the Super Bowl years. I think that's probably where I've started to start to learn a little bit more about it. And obviously, you've got the likes of OJ, which regardless of whether you're potentially born in the noughties or when we were born and coming to knowing about the Bills late, you'll always hear something about OJ, mainly bad, possibly, but obviously...
If we're talking just about football, then OJ is great.
Yes, he is great.
I gotta stop defending him. Why do I keep doing this? He's such a bad human being. Anyway.
We could talk about that to the...
Seems like every show we talk about OJ for some stupid reason. But anyway, did you learn your lesson? Who are your all-time D-line Buffalo Bills?
All-time. I've got... Well, you can't disagree with Bruce Smith.
Who? Kidding.
Bruce Smith?
Yeah, no.
Yes, I know you were being sarcastic there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had some guy... I think his name was Kyle Williams.
That was a fan favorite.
Yeah, I think I had him. I had... on the other side, on the other defensive end, I had Aaron Schobel.
Yeah.
And the last defensive tackle was a bit of a mismatch, a bit of a toss of a coin moment for me. I had it.
When we first started this episode, you still hadn't picked one yet, right? So you're picking one right now.
Picking right now. It was a pick between Pat Williams and Marcel Darius. I'm taking it for Darius.
Wow.
For that reason, yes, Pat Williams, when he went to the Vikings after he left the Bills in 2004, he exploded. He was probably one of the best defensive tackles in the league. But if we're looking for his time as the Bills, in less games, and probably they may have had different roles back in the time, Pat may have been just more of your run stopper type defensive tackle, but Pat Williams, 107 games, only 13 sacks, but he's had 258 tackles solo, 117 assisted tackles, whereas Darius in between 2011-17, 91 games, 35 sacks, which is second behind Carl Williams.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Defensive tackles aren't supposed to do that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Carl Williams, 48.5. sacks and solo tackles for Darius, 205 solo, 95 assisted. Okay, it's less than Williams, but it's the tackle for loss, because that was Pat Williams, 53-46, but Darius managed to hit the quarterback 56 times as a defensive tackle and get that many sacks, whereas Pat Williams, he did not get any quarterback hits. So he was more of your run stuff with the occasional.
He was a big man. He was a big man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that was a product of the defense too, because I think when you look back at those teams, Ted Washington, Pat Williams kind of time, we were running more of a 3-4 back then. So that nose tackle position was meant to just eat up space more than anything. Whereas with Kyle and Darius, that was the kind of pass rushing kind of 4-3 kind of defense. But my God, Marcel Darius' 2014 season, I mean, first team All-Pro, 10 sacks. I mean, that's so good.
Yeah.
And then he just kind of forgot to play football the next year.
Yeah. I mean, I love him personally, and I will say this, another decision, not just the stats, why I went for Darius, is I actually managed to got to meet Darius when the Bills came over to London. I got invited to have a little chat and a little tour around London with Marcel. So I've got I'm actually sitting staring at a signed ball from him, and I've got a signed couple of signed caps. So that may have swayed it a little bit more. But as I say, the stats don't seem to lie.
Yeah.
On there, and you're a big fan of your stats.
Yeah.
But I mean, with my defensive end, obviously, Bruce Smith.
Yep.
I've gone for Schobel. I mean, I've gone for Schobel. I think that he was underrated, but he was a really good pass rusher. I mean, in 133 games, 78 sacks, 333 solo tackles, 150 assisted, 60 quarterback hits. So he was always there. He was a mainstay. In this time, he was a fan favorite as well. In my opinion, I really do like him, and I think that is a dominant defensive line that I've actually put up.
Yeah, I mean the middle of Schobel's career from 03 to 07, the dude was unbelievable, and just he did it quietly too, which was kind of crazy.
Yeah,
but yeah, you know, when you mentioned that you had Darius's autograph, that got me to thinking about what athlete's autograph I have, and sadly, I only have one autograph, and it's from WWE superstar Booker T.
I like Booker.
That's all I have. My cousin was at a I didn't even get it. My cousin got it for me. He was at an Arena Football League game in Buffalo, the Buffalo Destroyers, he won like press box tickets or something. And Booker T was walking around signing autographs. Maybe wrestling was in town at the same time as this Buffalo Destroyers game, but yeah, it was back when he was in WCW even.
Yeah.
So sadly, that's the only autograph I've ever gotten. Very strange. Well,
I would also say that I think that same time when the Bills came over, I got into a Q&A session, which was organized, I think, by the NFL UK, where Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas were actually attending, and I managed to get both their signatures onto a shirt as well. So
nice.
It was a Sammy Watkins shirt.
When I move back home, I need to up my autograph game.
It was a Sammy Watkins shirt they signed, though.
Oh,
yeah.
But that's okay. I mean, you know what? You can get that changed, right? Or
possibly, but
yeah,
it's still signatures.
Yeah, but so, all right. So my D line. Okay, yeah. Let me bring up my D line here. I'm picking, let me see. I think probably Bruce Smith.
Yeah.
Had to think about that one for a second.
I can see what you're thinking of that one.
Bruce Smith, Kyle Williams are the locks, right? I mean,
yep.
That's undisputed. For my other defensive tackle, I went classic and went with Fred Smearless. Greater Buffalo Hall of Fame. The dude has a mouth on him. I mean, I probably wouldn't like him today, but back when he was playing football, I probably would have enjoyed him. It's great because back then guys stayed with teams. So you're looking at 11 yeah. seasons, five-time Pro Bowler, 1982 first-team All-Pro. I mean, we didn't have sack totals from 79 to 81, so his first few years, he's very stat-light. But, I mean, that was back when we were running another 3-4 defense. He was a run stopper. He was really like the cog, the anchor to that defense back then when we were kind of bad. So he was a bright spot on an otherwise bad team at the time.
Yeah.
My other defensive end, I would have loved to go with Schobel, but, I mean, he's just very forgettable in my book, just personality-wise. So he wasn't the first guy that came to mind. For me, I like the underdog kind of guy. I like the guy who doesn't have any Pro Bowls, so I went with Phil Hansen. Dude was just consistently good. Never missed a play or anything like that, except for injury. And on this team, I think he would really benefit from the double team that Bruce Smith would get. I consider him to be like an adopted Buffalonian. He was super great with the fans in the community. Great locker room guy. Marv Levy loved him. I mean, when you read any quote from Marv Levy about the comeback game, he mentions how unsung Phil Hansen's effect was on that game. You can read about it in Marv's book, Where Else Would You Rather Be? He talks a lot about Phil Hansen. I mean, yeah, there so many guys were more talented than him. But I can say that few would have matched him in terms of like intensity, professionalism, and like grit. And what's more Buffalo than that?
Yeah.
So that's my defensive line.
I mean, didn't he also split between defensive end and linebacker? He was one of those, he was one of the original like hybrid type, or was I just listening and meeting someone else?
Yeah, I only have him, he went back and forth between left and right, but I don't think he played any linebacker. Because, I mean, his tackle numbers are very reminiscent of what a defensive tackle, I mean, a defensive lineman would be. The most he had was 80 in 1996, which is kind of linebackery-ish, but especially with 60 solo tackles. But I think, again, that was just like a product of the defense back then.
Just trying to go through stats, see if I can actually see him on there, which, yeah, maybe I was actually listening to something so random. I do believe I did hear his name.
The argument could be made for Schobel over Hansen because Schobel played less. I mean, Schobel had 133 games, Hansen had 156, and Schobel has better numbers in less games. So usually I go with those kind of things. But I just like Phil Hansen as a player.
Yeah.
Just basically, like, it's more my kind of guy. And plus, I mean, I'm like that 90s guy. So no disrespect to Aaron Schobel. You'll probably win this one on the fan vote because of Schobel instead of me picking Hansen. So, I mean, but who do you have for maybe an honorable mention? I know you mentioned some guys, but let's make like a complete list.
Honorable mentions. I had obviously I had Pat Williams because I believe he was my debate with the Darius incident. I also had Chris Kelce.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another underrated player. Maybe didn't get as much as much attention, but still put up good numbers for when he was actually on.
Mm-hmm. If you want to grab an AFL guy, that could be Tom Sestak. He was you're looking at a time when sacks weren't recorded, but in terms of that Pro Football Reference stat I gave, the approximate value, he does rank sixth all time in Buffalo Bills defensive linemen with a 72 approximate value in comparison to Bruce Smith's 194, but he's the best defensive end of all time. Mm. So. Yeah, I also like you said Pat Williams. I like Ted Washington for that.
Yeah.
Chris Kelce.
Yeah.
The guy who was running with Schobel. Doesn't have dynamic stats. Caught a touchdown, which is fun. But yeah, I mean, Mario Williams even ranks up there in terms of players. I mean, in terms of approximate value, Mario Williams as a Bill was better than Pat Williams as a Bill. But I just think that's because Pat Williams was more of that 3-4 guy, so he wouldn't have accrued much in terms of statistical analysis on how good he was.
Yeah. But I'm
pretty sure his Madden rating was in the 90s, if that means anything to anybody.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say, well, again, like always, we'll put it to a vote on Twitter, on Facebook. As I say, we've got Alex, who's got Bruce Smith, Carl Williams. Who's your middle one again?
Fred Smearless
and Phil Hansen against me with Bruce Smith, Carl Williams, Marcel Darius, and Aaron Schobel.
Yeah, I'm going to
lose. He might do. Hey, you never know. You never know. Some people may think I'm just being biased towards the newer generation, but...
Oh, but I really think, as we've mentioned, the goal here is to build a team that could beat anybody else's team, and I think your defensive line can do that better than mine.
Especially
with trying to rush the quarterback. I mean, if we're trying to stop the run, that's kind of my team. You're trying to get to the quarterback. That's more your team.
Yeah, but I say we'll let the listeners decide, and again, we'll have the others option open. But please, if you do select others, please actually put down who you'd have on there so we can at least calculate and collate the results. And if the others do win, we can actually then look and see who's won and which players have got in. So we'll put that up as soon as the as soon as this episode goes live.
Yep, great. So to end this show, I just kind of wanted to briefly talk about fantasy football. I don't know how many leagues you're in, Matt, but right now I'm only in two and I want more. My wife probably doesn't want me to have more, but I want to have more fantasy football leagues. So any listener out there, if you're not already, join the Facebook group, UK Bills. I'll set up a post creating a league in Yahoo, which is my preferred. I think someone else ran last year an ESPN league that we're going to get going again. So we'll have one league in Yahoo, one league in ESPN. I'll put the links up on the UK Bills Facebook group. And, you know, we'll discuss money. Depends on how serious you guys are about it. But I'm just super excited for fantasy football coming up.
We're also looking to do a few. I know. Me and you've had chats off air about obviously NFL fantasy football. So I'm gonna put a few more on there as well. So we'll give you a choice of which ones to go in, and we're also looking to add other fantasy competitions like Last Man Standing or Predict the Picks type fantasy game, so we can all have fun during the season and get a few bragging rights here and there. So
yeah,
that's something that me, Alex, and I've got a couple of other people helping me out on this one to do. So we'll get that up as well. Please do register interest if you're interested. If you have a preferred fantasy football one, whether it be the NFL.com one, the ESPN or the Yahoo one, if you do register, please say which one you would like to be in, so we don't just randomly assign you to one. And yeah, we'll get that up. We'll get that moving within the next week or so, ready for the draft season.
Good stuff.
So what we've got coming up in the next show, we go on to linebackers. So we can pick our 53-man linebackers team. We go with the all-time linebackers team. We're going to try and get another interview with a Bills reporter. Hopefully, we're just working on the fundamentals and getting it arranged. So hopefully, next episode we'll have another in-depth review on training camp, and we'll also review the first preseason game we have against the Indianapolis Colts. So we've got football season now only what, 4 or 5 days away from whenever this podcast gets put out. So it's all getting squeaky bum. Everyone's getting excited. So we will we'll look forward to that with interest.
Yeah, let's all cross our fingers and our toes that no one gets injured.
Exactly. So until next time, it's good afternoon, good evening, good morning if you still listen to this. Thank you for listening. Keep subscribing and go Bills.
Go Bills.
Not us.
Yeah, not us.
You don't know anything about heart.
You don't know anything about work.
No. Huh? That's who we are.
Bills on three. 1, 2, 3.